Today, risk upon risk upon risk. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World. This post covering finance and property news. Well, the financial markets have been fighting the Fed since last October, especially since the start of this year, in two ways. The first involves bidding up stock prices in anticipation of the so-called Fed pivot, which, by the way, is probably self-defeating. And the second strategy involves factoring in low interest rates into bond prices. The backdrop is mounting economic uncertainty and greater risk, as financial leaders of the Group of Seven, the G7 nations, warned on Saturday in a subdued end to a three-day meeting overshadowed by concerns about the US debt stalemate and fallout from Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The gathering in the Japanese city of Niigata came as global policymakers, already preoccupied by US bank failures and efforts to reduce reliance on China, are now forced to grapple with a potential default by the world's largest economy. While the communique made no mention of the debt ceiling stalemate, it figured consistently in discussions, and the standoff has hit markets as borrowing costs have risen on aggressive monetary tightening by US and European central banks. The global economy has shown resilience against multiple shocks, including the COVID-19 pandemic, Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine, and associated inflationary pressures, the finance ministers and central bankers said. We need to remain vigilant and stay agile and flexible in our macroeconomic policy amid heightened uncertainty about the global economic outlook, they added in the communique after the meeting. US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who has said a first-ever US default could occur within weeks if the impasse is not resolved, said the standoff was more difficult than in the past, but remained hopeful of the solution. Britain's Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt gave a sobering assessment, saying it would be absolutely devastating if the US failed to reach agreement to raise the federal borrowing limit and had its economic growth knocked off track. G7 central bank chiefs vowed to combat elevated inflation and to ensure expectations on future price moves remained well anchored, a sign many of them will not let their guard down against stubbornly high inflation. Seeking to reassure investors after recent US bank failures, the G7 finance chiefs retained an April assessment that the global financial system was resilient, but they pledged in the communique to tackle data, supervisory, and regulatory gaps in the banking system. China, although not a member of the G7, was a focus, with Japan spearheading efforts to diversify supply chains and to reduce the G7's heavy reliance on the world's second biggest economy. In the communique, the finance leaders set a year-end deadline for launching a new scheme to diversify global supply chains. That envisages the G7 offering aid to low and middle income countries to secure them a bigger role in supply chain for energy related products. Many central banks face an inflection point with aggressive interest rate hikes beginning to cool growth and unsettling the banking system. The Bank of Japan governor, who chaired the meeting's discussion of monetary policy, said most central banks appear to feel the impact of past interest rate hikes had yet to show fully as they look to guide future monetary policy. Many say they want to guide monetary policy taking that point in mind, he said at the press conference. The group reiterated its condemnation of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and pledged to strengthen monitoring of cross-border transactions between Russia and other countries. Now, these discussions will lay the groundwork for the G7 summit starting on Friday in Hiroshima, where concerns about China's use of economic coercion in its dealings abroad will figure. US President Joe Biden had planned to attend the Hiroshima summit, Yellen said, but added it would cancel the trip if progress on the debt impasse was insufficient. Now in the US, stocks ended slightly lower on Friday, led by weaker mega-cap shares following their recent rally, as data showed US consumer sentiment dropped to a six-month low. The Dow was barely lower in its fifth straight day of declines, the blue chip's longest streak of loss in 2 months. But Tesla shares fell 2.3% after jumping more than 2% on Thursday when its CEO announced that he had found a new chief executive for Twitter. The S&P 500 technology sector was down 0.2%, while the consumer discretionary index fell 0.9%. Shares of Apple and Amazon were among the biggest drags on the S&P 500, along with Tesla. The technology index is still up about 22% so far this year, though. They had an incredible run, so those valuation concerns are starting to manifest themselves, said Peter Tutz, president of Chase Investment. To their credit, they have strong balance sheets. They had decent first quarters, so their businesses seem to be holding up. But there comes a point where valuations do matter. Among Friday's gainers, News Corp shares rallied 8.5% after the media conglomerate beat Wall Street estimates for the third quarter profit. And First Solar shares jumped 26.5% after the solar panel maker acquired Sweden's thin film solar cell technology firm Evolva. Regional bank stocks were trying to recover after dropping on Thursday. PacWest Bank Corp was down 2% after disclosing that deposits dropped by more than 9% last week. Banks have been bending under the weight of much higher interest rates, which have caused some customers to pull deposits out in search of higher yields, while also dragging down prices for the investments that the banks hold. And the regional banking indices were also down again. But it's not just Wall Street that's concerned. Sentiment among US consumers is tumbling, according to the preliminary survey by the University of Michigan. That's a worry because strong spending by consumers have been one of the pillars keeping an already slowing economy from sliding into a recession. Joanne Hu, director of the surveys of consumers, pointed to the looming June the 1st deadline when the US government could run out of cash to pay its bills unless Congress allows it to borrow more. If policymakers fail to resolve the debt ceiling crisis, these dismal views over the economy will exacerbate the dire economic consequences of default, she said in a statement. May consumer sentiment dropped to its lowest number since November. The University of Michigan's consumer sentiment reading for May came in at 57.7. That's much lower than the 63 expected and down from 63.5 in April. Treasury yields rose in the bond market following the consumer sentiment report. The yield on the 10-year Treasury erased an earlier dip and climbed to 3.46% from 3.39% late on Thursday. And of course, that rate helped set rates for mortgages and other important loans. The 2-year yield, which moves more on expectations of what the Fed is going to do, rose to 3.99% from 3.9%. Now, some future traders expect that the Federal Reserve will pause interest rates when it meets next month, after more than a year of aggressive hikes that brought the benchmark rate from near zero to about 5%. Investors are concerned that the Fed's aggressive interest rate hikes could push the economy into recession, but Fed Governor Michelle Bowman said on Friday that the Fed will probably need to raise rates further if inflation stays high. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.03% to 33,300, and the S&P 500 lost 0.16% to 4,124, while the Nasdaq Composite dropped 0.35% to 12,284. For the week, the Dow was down 1.1%, the S&P 500 fell 0.3%, and the Nasdaq rose 0.4%. The Congressional Budget Office said on Friday that the US faces a significant risk of defaulting on payment obligations within the first 2 weeks of June without a debt ceiling increase. Historically, the public debt drama will drag on with Democrats and Republicans negotiating until the very final hours before the cash on the US Treasury balance sheet ends. That's to say, an agreement will be reached at the end of May, probably. Some analysts believe this time, though, could be an exception. But even if the drama drags on past the deadline, it will not be for that long and will result in an increase of the national debt ceiling. those unwilling to make concessions will simply lose their votes at next year's election. One way or another, whether shortly after or shortly before June 1, the debt ceiling will be raised by $1.5 trillion or thereabouts. This is where the fun starts, actually. Immediately after the government approves the raising of the national debt ceiling, the Fed will start to provide the US budget with liquidity, but not for the whole $1.5 trillion. The US Treasury will issue bonds for most of that amount to obtain liquidity. That will lead to liquidity in the financial markets being decreased. The problems of liquidity will appear with a lag of, say, 1 to 2 months. So in June and July, the market may well fall due to that low liquidity. Those difficulties will pile on top of the ongoing problems with the banks, the recession risks, and the struggles of the real estate market, where high interest rates on loans have reduced residential and commercial real estate transactions to almost nothing. And let's not forget that the rapidly growing federal budget expenditures, the authorities have spent $3.15 trillion in fiscal year 2023, starting, that's in October 2022. That's 30% more than the year before. Now, over in Europe, European stock markets traded high on Friday as investors digested mixed UK growth data, as well as more quarterly corporate earnings. The DAX index in Germany traded 0.5% higher. The FTSE in London climbed 0.3%, and the CAC 40 in France rose 0.45%. Data released on Friday showed that the UK economy grew by just 0.1% in the first 3 months of 2023, despite an unexpectedly sharp 0.3% drop in output in March, which of course was a month full of strikes. The fall in March was driven by widespread decreases across the services sector, the ONS statistician Darren Morgan said early on Friday. The Bank of England lifted interest rates by 25 basis points on Thursday to the highest level since 2008 as it combats inflation at highly elevated levels, but also mentioned the resilience of the economy as it upgraded its growth projections. Data from France and Spain confirmed that inflation remained elevated in those two major Eurozone countries. The European Central Bank also hiked interest rates last week and signalled more increases lay ahead, with ECB President Christine Lagarde stating on Thursday that the central bank's efforts to curb inflation isn't yet over. The earnings season continued on Friday with Richemont stocks climbing 5% to an all-time high, after the Swiss luxury group expressed confidence in benefiting strongly from a recovery in Chinese demand. Société Générale stocks rose 0.9% after the French lender beat quarterly earnings estimates as its bond trading offset a slump in retail banking. Allianz stock fell 0.4% despite the German financial services company posting a healthy jump in first quarter net profit, rebounding after taking charges a year ago for a US funds scandal that weighed by weakness, though, on its asset management division. Norwegian Air Shuttle stock fell 4.7% after the budget carrier reported a first quarter loss, with this outweighing strong summer booking numbers. Oil prices fell on Friday, that's a fourth week of declines, on worries that the US economy is heading towards recession, coupled with lingering fears over a slow recovery in China's fuel demand. But speculation that the US could repurchase oil for its heavily depleted strategic petroleum reserve, if prices consistently trade around $70 a barrel, is providing a degree of support. US crude futures traded 1.18% lower at $70.09 a barrel, while the Brent contract dropped 1.08% to $74.19. Both benchmarks fell a further 1% this past week, and it will appear traders are waiting for one of two events to dictate the path of travel going forward, either another bank failure or an OPEC plus production cut. You could throw the US debt ceiling drama and default to the mix too, I guess. A lower growth environment is seemingly expected now in light of recent bank failures and a less inspiring Chinese COVID recovery. And gold futures were down 0.23% to $2,015 an ounce US. So has gold entered a correction phase? Well, the gold rally and run to record territory is gradually deflating, despite inflation data this week being respectable and pointing perhaps in the right direction. Despite it even coming in slightly better than expected, the other metal is drifting lower for a third day, perhaps a sign the trend was looking a little tired. Another run at record territory may well be on the cards at some point down the track, but for now the focus has turned to key support zones, the first of which is 1,950 to 1,970, where prices are facing pushback repeatedly in recent months. Most Asian stock markets fell on Friday, capping off a week marked by soft economic readings and a worsening outlook for the year, although Japan's Nikkei blazed past its peers on a batch of strong earnings. The Nikkei 225 index jumped 0.9% to its strongest level since late December, buoyed by strong earnings from Nissan Motor Corporation and Honda Motor Corporation, which rose 4% and 5% respectively. The automakers added to a string of strong Japanese earnings prints this week, with surprise beats from firms such as Toyota and Nintendo, while the country's five biggest trading houses logged bumper profits, but shares in the investment giant SoftBank Group sank 3% after the firm logged a second consecutive annual loss. The strong run of Japanese earnings shows that economic headwinds from slowing growth and high inflation have so far had little impact on corporate profits, indicating that the Japanese economy is still running steady. The Nikkei was also supported by recent signals from the Bank of Japan that it plans to maintain its ultra-dovish monetary policy, at least for the time being. But Japanese stocks were the outlier on Friday, with most other Asian markets trading lower on concerns over slowing growth in the world's largest economies. China's Shanghai Composite Index fell 1.12% as disappointing trades and inflation data this week raised more doubts about a potential post-COVID economic rebound in the country this year. While Beijing is likely to release more stimulus measures to shore up economic growth in the coming months, a string of data released this month shows that the Chinese economy is cooling after initial bounce in the first quarter. Weakness in China also bodes poorly for broader Asian economies with high trade exposures to the country. Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell 0.59% on Friday, while South Korea's Kospi fell 0.63%. And in Australia, QBE was a share market casualty on Friday, as the insurer said damage from catastrophes had been elevated since the start of the year. In early trading, its shares fell almost 9%, but it ended the day down just 3.6% to $14.61. That's the lowest level in 6 weeks. Mining giants extended losses as iron ore prices fell on worries that China's post-pandemic economic recovery was losing steam. BHP Group fell 1.2% to $43.48, and Rio Tinto slipped 1% to $107.96, followed by Fortescue Metals down 0.59% to $20.10. Energy shares also came under pressure as oil prices extended losses. Beach Energy shaved 1.4% off to $1.40, and Woodside slipped 0.4% to $33.66. But healthcare stocks limited losses on the local exchange, rallying 1.2%, with CSL 1.4% higher to $306.36, and ResMed gained 1.2% to $35.18. The share market, however, eked out just a 0.1% gain to 7,256 in a session dominated by a sell-off in commodity stocks as base metals fell in London and iron ore prices slid. The ASX 200 ended the session with a 0.5% weekly gain. That's the first increase in 4 weeks. The most traded September iron ore contract on China's Dalian Commodity Exchange dropped as much as 3.6% to $147 a ton, on track for a sixth consecutive weekly decline. And on the Singapore Exchange, the June contract rallied 0.58%, but to just $103.68. Lithium shares were among the rare commodity winners and resumed their upward march. Lake Resources climbed 13% to 65 cents. Core Lithium bounced 5% to $1.00. 14.5, and Liontown Resources added 1.4% to $2.97. Sandfire Resources were the index biggest laggard, though, with a decline of 5.5% to $6.14, and Regis Resources shed 3.7% to $2.07, and Evolution Mining lost 2.6% to $3.78. Shares in News Corporation bounced 4.7% on the local exchange to $25.96, with the media giant reporting an earnings drop of 11% to $320 million US in the March quarter because of, quote, an insipid advertising market, rising costs, and lower property prices. Shares in Almond Grower Select Harvests retreated 1.4% to $4.40 after lowering its 2023 crop volume forecasts, and REA Group stock edged up 0.3% to $139.05. Its revenue fell $24 million US dollars, or 10% to $222 million US dollars, with fewer homes for sale and lower financial services income. The Aussie slid on Friday to 66.44 against the US dollar, down 0.85%, and was also down against the UK pound, sliding 0.37% to 53.36. And finally, in crypto land, Bitcoin is entering prime buy the dip territory as the clock ticks down to the 2024 block halving, at least according to several well-known market participants, with Bitcoin just 1 year away from its very interesting next halving. These four-year epochs have so far contained a macro high and a macro low for the price, with those events likewise 4 years apart from each other. And what's more, in each cycle, the macro low has tended to occur a little over 1 year before the next halving. For long-time Bitcoin figures, including crypto media guru Pete Rizzio, there is thus little reason to believe that the future will be substantially different. A small reminder, the world's most valuable money is only designed to get more scarce. Plan accordingly, he wrote in a tweet on May the 12th. Rizzo was celebrating the 3-year anniversary of the 2020 halving, and an accompanying chart underscored the Bitcoin price behavior relating to how many months remain before a halving event. Commentating investor and entrepreneur Alistair Milne went further, suggesting that for those looking to profit from Bitcoin exposure, the time to buy is now, while the months before the halving are less beneficial entry points. Don't short when it's dark green and be all in before it's blue, he summarized the chart's content. But don't get too excited, as Bitcoin was sitting at 26,794, and to my mind, it still continues to track the vagaries of the broader markets. And Ether was last at 1,803.80. So standing back, you can see that there are so many risks sloshing about in the system at the moment that financial markets, I think, are going to continue to struggle to make gains, and there's still significant downside risk. Obviously, the US debt ceiling is one to watch, although they'll probably fix that one way or the other. But the recession risks are definitely building. China's bounce back after COVID is weaker than expected. The US consumer is getting twitchy. And of course, interest rates are probably set to go higher still. So in conclusion, risks abound, and your market strategy should reflect that. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.